Noel Pearson, thank you for taking time to speak with me and the various faith communities around Australia.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Faith communities represent not just a significant part of Australia, but also committed to doing what's best for our First Nations peoples. As a leader in your community, what are the biggest issues facing Indigenous Australians today? And has that list changed over your time in public service?
Okay. There's problems that we share with other disadvantaged peoples, Indigenous and non-Indigenous. And they're problems of poverty and disadvantage, intergenerational welfare dependency and all of the problems that come with that. But there's also issues that we face that arise from our history as Indigenous peoples in this country and our experience through 230 years of British colonisation of Australia, commencing in 1788, the dispossession of our people from our homelands, the removal of people and children from families, our various experiences on the frontier and in the aftermath of the frontier. All of these things represent a legacy in the present, that historical treatment, and we're trying to tackle the legacy of both.
Is there anything specifically that faith communities can do that isn't being done yet?
Well, I was actually born in a Lutheran mission in Cape York Peninsula, as was my father. And my grandfather had been removed to a mission, to the mission in Cape Bedford in 1899. And the mission had begun with the Lutherans. A young 19-year-old missionary came out from Bavaria. And had he not established the mission, we would have been done for, I think, historically. He found our people in a pretty dire straits. There'd been a gold rush at Cooktown that had been quite devastating for the Aboriginal people of the region. And he established a mission to which he committed himself for 50 years. And without him, my historical assessment would be that we would have been in a, you know, we wouldn't have been able to rebuild families inside the mission. We wouldn't have kept our languages. We wouldn't have kept our cultures, even though the experiences they had, you know, being drawn in from multiple places around Queensland, far-flung places, removed from their homelands and their families. Nevertheless, they reconstructed a new community at Cape Bedford Mission, and that's been my home ever since.
As combined faith communities, we also have constituents and heavily invested members from the Hindu community and Islamic communities and the Buddhist communities and mm-hmm. so many others. What invitation would you like to offer or encouragement as we're considering our role as believers in supporting First Nations Australians?
Oh, it's the empowerment of our people. I think this is the number one problem of our communities. We are severely disempowered. We were locked out of opportunity for a long time throughout the 20th century. You know, we were locked out of opportunities for better education. My father went to grade 3 in the mission when he had the intelligence to do better. It's just unlike America, we just didn't offer many educational opportunities beyond a rudimentary primary education until the 60s. And then the Lutheran Church opened up access to its colleges in southeast Queensland, and which is where I ended up going to high school, at a boarding school run by the Lutherans in Brisbane. And it opened up all of the world of opportunity to me that my family could not provide for me. And as a result of that, I completed year 12 in Brisbane, as did my brother and so many other children from the remote communities. And I went on to university in Sydney to become a lawyer. But it was all because the church was the first mover in this. long before government provided scholarships, actually, the churches were providing opportunities for Aboriginal children. But I really contrast it with the United States and North America, where black colleges and were established, you know, in the early part of the 20th century. In fact, the late 19th century, they were making provision for schools for African Americans and so on. Whereas in Australia, it was very, very late. 1960s, 1970s was when education became available, and the churches were at the forefront of it.
Let's go to The Voice specifically. Your proposition is that The Voice in its current form is the best way forward to address that disadvantage you've already spoken of. Why is this voice the answer?
Firstly, I would say it is crucial to the empowerment process that we be able to make representations, give good advice, so that we get better policies. And if we get better policies and better response from government, we'll get better outcomes. So the idea of an advisory committee, do you think that's really beyond the capacity of Australians to understand and support? I don't understand how there could be a scare campaign around an advisory committee. The MPs that we elect to the parliament are still the ones that decide what the policies are and what the laws are. All we're doing with a voice is empowering Indigenous people to make representations to those bodies.
Critics of The Voice, of course, challenge the idea on the grounds that one group of people can't possibly represent the combined nations of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities around the country. What's your view on that?
Okay, I come from a community, right? An ex-mission, and Hopevale would need to speak at the local level, would need a voice at the local level, so we can sort out the local issues to do with children, education, health, infrastructure, housing, and everything else at the local level. And we will have the opportunity to work with the parliament following a successful referendum. We'll have an opportunity to make sure the local footprint of the voice at the Hopevale level, at the Yuendumu level, at the Wilcannia level, at the La Perouse level, we will have a mechanism to make sure that those local communities that actually have to do the on-the-ground change. You know, if you're going to close the gap, you can't close it in Canberra. You've got to close it in La Perouse. You've got to close it in Dubbo. I can tell you after 20-plus years, you know, I mean, 20-plus years of advocating specific programs and specific initiatives to help families, we have a Family Responsibilities Commission. Because of the collapse of responsibility caused by welfare, we actually have a commission that says the elders can step in and oblige parents to send their kids to school, to look after their house, to ensure that, you know, parents and adults are abiding by the law and ensuring that the housing tenancy is properly looked after. We have to do that because that's combating the problems of welfare. And, you know, it took me and my colleagues in Cape York to fight for this reform. And it was so hard. It took a long time. And we got a response, and we're really happy with what's happening. But, you know, that's just one community. Not everybody has the ability to force the change and force the reform. And when we have the voice, we're going to be in a position to ask ourselves the question, does that empower people, or is it just empower the people providing the program? And this is going to be the great thing. We're going to save money. And we're going to use money more purposefully, because I believe if you support the family to rebuild, we'll get better results. But the one thing you can't avoid doing is you've got to place a responsibility back in their hands.
Okay, let's go to October 15, the day after the referendum. The nation's voted yes. What's the timeline? What happens next?
Oh, I am sure we will then need to work on the legislation. The Parliament will have to develop the legislation, pass legislation, and we will need to work with them on the creation of a bill to design it as best possible. And that will take some time. But once we implement the structure, I think this whole thing will play out and we'll start to see the benefit of having programs, having policies, not just that are better designed, but that have got our skin in the game. Because one of the problems at the moment is that government does everything. Government takes responsibility for everything. They have to account for everything. And we just sit back and judge. We criticize. Whereas the future will be, oh, it's the government and the community that are now in this, and we're both jointly responsible, and you can jointly blame us. I heard a young leader from the Kimberley say this 3 weeks ago, and it really struck me. He said, "You can blame us, but first give us the responsibility. First give us the voice." And I think that will be the change after we do this referendum. You know, this is a time for faith. Have faith in us. We're a good people. The Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, my people. We're a good people. Don't be fearful of us. Have belief in us. That is the one thing we need from our fellow Australians. Some faith, hope, and belief in our capacity to finally tackle our problems.
If it's a no, how do we go about solving the disadvantage that we're still dealing with today before the referendum?
Well, no will be a continuation of the present. A situation where every year the Prime Minister goes into the Parliament and tells us, oh, we haven't made progress on closing this gap. We haven't made progress on closing this gap. And we haven't made progress on closing this gap. We will have a continuation of that.
You don't see any other future?
Well, what future have we had over the last, say, 26 years, 21 of which have been... where we've had a coalition government. 21 years. If the status quo was ever going to produce the right results, we've had 21 years to prove it, and it hasn't happened. So those who say, oh, keep it as it is, keep the status quo, where's their evidence that that is ever going to change anything? Because it hasn't so far.
Noel, we're coming to the end of our time together. Thank you for it. The conversation over the last weeks and months haven't always been healthy. Come October 14, a fork in the road, yes or no. On the 15th, how do we come together as a nation after all of that and form a straight line together?
You know where the first fork in the road was? In 1901, when we were excluded from the constitution of our own country. That was the source of the problem. We're going to fix it now. We're going to close the gap. We're going to put that one missing piece back into the Constitution that recognises, these are the words, in recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as the first peoples of Australia. That's the kind of keystone of the Commonwealth that's missing. And in 2023, we're going to do something we didn't do in 1901. 1901, we were excluded from the Constitution. We now have an opportunity with this referendum to put that keystone back into our Constitution and complete a united Australia.
Noel Pearson, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you for having me.